welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. In this episode, we're focusing on answering all of your questions about the new MLS Apple media rights deal, plus some other topics too, including the World Cup 2026, the Premier League, and much more. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined this week by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, before we head into kind of, we've gotten so many questions from listeners and readers, so much so over the last week or two that we're going to do a whole episode based on that, answering a lot of the questions, discussing a lot of the topics. There's a lot to get to, and we're still in June, and this Apple MLS deal doesn't happen until 2023. As an aside on a completely unrelated topic, this week World Soccer Talk launched two different things. On Monday, we launched our directory of Premier League supporters groups throughout the United States. We went ahead and researched all of the different supporters clubs from around the United States for the Premier League. Of course, 20 teams, including the new teams promoted to the Premier League. More than 665 supporters groups, which is incredible. And the reaction so far has been very positive. So if you're a member of a supporters group or you're in charge of a supporters group, head on over to worldsoccertalk.com, check the list, make sure you're on there. If you're not on there, we try to make it as complete as possible, but sometimes it's impossible to get everyone. If you're missing on there, let us know. We'd love to add you onto it. Then on Tuesday, we launched our World Cup Predictor, and this is a free online tool on the website, worldsoccertalk.com. And this has every single group, every single match in the 2022 World Cup. And what it allows you to do is to go ahead, just like the old BBC Sport Predictor in the past, Kartik, to go ahead and put the results in for each of the games, your predictions. It tabulates then the group standings and shows you which two teams advance. And then it shows you in the knockout stages which teams will play who. So, Kartik, any flashbacks from the BBC Sport Predictor way back when?
Yeah, it was much easier to predict relegation in those days because the predictor would effectively... I mean, I would, every season after about round 28 of the Premier League, go through the bottom five or six teams, predict the results, and come out with the bottom three. And generally, there were times I was wrong, but generally it gave me a better sense. You know, this season in particular, I could have used it with the way Burnley, Everton, and Leeds, it was a lot of speculation. And it's funny because you say, oh, well, you can still go through the fixtures and make notes, but it just, there was something very clean about that BBC predictor that made it simple. And for promotion from the championship too, by the way, same thing.
Yeah, definitely. We were inspired by the BBC Sport Predictor. And it's one of those things that, you're right, Kartik. Once you go in and start putting in the prediction of the results, then the group standings look a little bit different because, you think, okay, if you say from Group B, who's going to advance? And you mean, a lot of soccer fans would say England and blank. You mean, whether it's USA, Wales, or Iran. Well, it's easy to say that, but once you go through and look at the matchups, but not only the matchups, but the order of the games. So, for example, England starting against Iran, then coming up against the USA, and then finishing in the last game against Wales. Does that give them an easier path to go ahead and qualify for the second round? Because perhaps they have a game against Wales, the last game that may be rather meaningless for England if they've already qualified. So on and so forth for each of the 32 teams in the World Cup. Kartik, on last week's podcast, in our What to Watch This Weekend recommendation, you had the recommendation, and then it was so good that I seconded it. It was a game that I'm sure you watched too. I watched, hopefully a lot of our viewers watched, and it seems to be, so far, from the viewing numbers, a lot of America watched. Tell us about the match of the weekend to watch last week before we talk about the match to watch this weekend.
Right, Detroit City and El Paso. Detroit City has an absolute unique atmosphere in terms of professional clubs in the United States. It was an atmosphere they built as an amateur club. There are a lot of elements that have gone into it. The Detroit City story unique, and it conveys itself differently on television than other clubs and other atmospheres. So ESPN moves this game from ESPN2 to ESPN. Kickoff noon on a Saturday. Not really much else going on in the world of sports. Yeah, a third round of the U.S. Open over on NBC. But that's really about it, right? NWSL's on CBS later in the day. Or was NWSL on CBS on Sunday? I'm trying to remember now. The San Diego game. I watched it. I just can't remember which day it was. But anyway, there's not much else going on. And it had more viewers than we're accustomed to seeing MLS matches have in that slot. Noon on Saturday being kind of a difficult time historically, and 2 p.m. Saturday for MLS games. Sunday maybe do a little better. So 197,000 viewers on ESPN for a USL championship match. Really significant number, especially when compared to some of the MLS numbers that we've seen. So a lot of American soccer fans were watching, and I think more importantly, Chris, it created a conversation after the match about atmospheres, about Detroit City, and put a lot of MLS fans on the defensive. I don't know why so many MLS fans are insecure about any kind of conversation about Detroit, or in the past about NASL, now about USL. Things are different. People have their own preferences as to what they enjoy. I don't know why there's so much defensiveness about it.
Yeah, so from this match, some of the things that stood out for me were the playing style. I thought the playing style, the level of playing, was as good as Major League Soccer. I mean, I didn't see a massive drop-off like watching this game, thinking like, the way that these teams are playing is second division. To me, it was right up there with a lot of MLS games I've watched. The atmosphere is incredible. I mean, we knew going into this match, you and I and some of our listeners, and that's what you said last weekend too, Kartik. You said this is a match to watch just for the atmosphere alone. And it was. I mean, some of the examples, in the first half, you had Detroit fans, and the camera faces their fans. So you see their fans with some really interesting banners, scarves waving throughout the game. But then you had the trains passing in the background. You had the train drivers honking during the games to give support to the team and the players and the fans, and then the fans react. You had food trucks in the background. You had it felt like watching an FA Cup game from, you mean, maybe, I don't know, Marine FC against Liverpool or Everton or something like that, where it was a lower division team playing against a bigger team. In this case, it's a USL Championship game, so it's on equal footing. But just the optics were great to see. It was great television, and the game was good. So I have no complaints. I think MLS fans are used to being defensive. They're defensive about the league in many ways because they probably feel that they're attacked quite often. But you and I mean, we can watch MLS, we can watch USL, we can watch NISA or NPSL or any league from around the world. There's good things and bad things about anything, but I enjoyed it. What about this weekend, Kartik? I know that Hartford Athletic against Louisville is going to be on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. So USL gets another game in a really great time and also channel, of course. Hartford Athletic, can you tell me anything about them in terms of, I mean, I doubt they're going to have as good an atmosphere as Detroit FC.
No, and they've had some ups and downs in terms of fans, but they've fielded a competitive team, and I think that they've been a good team to watch since they came into the league a couple seasons ago. That would be the thing I would point out about Hartford. I mean, I even saw a Hartford live in an exhibition, a couple exhibition matches in Central Florida their first season, and they were already an entertaining side, playing with the ball, keeping the ball, moving the ball side to side. So I think they'll be an entertaining team to watch. Louisville is always a good team to watch, always an elite team, really kind of maybe the elite brand in terms of winning in USL. Maybe that brand that would be equivalent to Seattle in terms of winning in MLS. I guess Seattle would be the most prominent brand that we associate with winning at MLS these days.
Yeah, so definitely more of the action on the pitch on Saturday in our recommended game to watch this weekend. Moving on to listener mailbag, and this is where we're going to spend most of our time today. Starting up on the topic of MLS and their recent deal with Apple, Mike says, another outstanding show. I really enjoyed your discussion about MLS media rights. I, for one, am ecstatic about the Apple deal. There's absolutely nothing more frustrating than not being able to watch a match because of a blackout. Shoulder programming should expand as well. Ra says, to me, the most interesting fact is that ESPN was not interested. They have MLS games on ESPN Plus. They also have MLS on Star Plus in Latin America. They have access to all the viewership ratings for these properties. They are the ones that had all of the data to do a proper long-term valuation. It's interesting to hear that they believe it's not worth it. I'm sure MLS would rather have ESPN as a global partner. Another point, with inflation, this deal might seem horrible for MLS 5 to 10 years from now. For Apple, I believe they were interested on the global rights, not because they see it as a big opportunity, but to do a showcase to NBA, NHL, and others that they about how they could benefit from a global centralized offering. Yeah, that global part of the deal, Kartik, is something that is attractive. It in some ways, it's very easy to understand, right? No matter where you are in the world, you can watch MLS games through the MLS streaming service on the Apple TV app. And for ESPN to pass on the opportunity for the streaming, I think it came down to more the money side of things. I mean, if ESPN knew that Apple TV was in the hunt to get the rights, why get into a bidding war with Apple? Because you're going to lose against Apple in terms of the enormous riches that they do have. However, I do think, Kartik, that this was something that MLS, they didn't really have much else to choose from in terms of the offers. So ESPN has showed relatively, on the streaming side, no interest. On the TV side, little interest. Fox showed little interest. And with no other players in the actual arena that was really, really competitive, I think they had to go to Apple. And Apple then wanted that global deal, and they got it. They got everything that they wanted.
Yeah, in terms of ESPN showing no interest, which I reported last week, and I've confirmed with the sources. I've gone back and confirmed with them. That is about streaming rights in the United States. So I should have prefaced that. I don't know that Disney, with their various entities, Star, and is, I know it's Star in India, Star in Latin America as well. They've got different ones in Australia. I don't know. Maybe they were interested in some other markets. But once Apple was interested, I guess MLS decided they would do a global deal with them. So when I said ESPN wasn't interested, I'm speaking specifically about the United States market and the streaming rights here. It is possible they weren't interested in those other markets too. But yeah, doing a global deal makes it very interesting without blackouts. I think that's a plus for MLS. I think it's also, quite frankly, there are people who need football fixes all over the world and at various times. And there are cult followings for the J League and the A League in this country and for different things that are on at odd times. So MLS could have that window in some places now with this Apple deal. You'll know where to find it at least.
Yeah, I think Ra is spot on here, though, Kartik, because this does give a blueprint to other leagues that Apple will be approaching to say, hey, if you come with us, you can get a deal like we have with MLS, where we are available in every country in the world through the Apple TV app. And like you were saying, too, about Disney Plus or Disney or ESPN Plus, I mean, in different markets, they're known by different names, and they may not have a global kind of footprint. It's confusing, right? You mean, like, if you go to Europe, it's a different type of service than it is in the US, and so on and so forth. With Apple TV, it is very simplistic. It is, okay, hey, if you want to subscribe to our services, Apple TV is the name, go in and subscribe. So for the other sports, like Ra mentioned, that could be something that's very enticing. I mean, cutting out a lot of the complexity. Next up is Rob. Rob says, very interesting discussion this past week. I thought one of the more interesting points was with respect to local TV. On the one hand, I agree with Kartik that there is some level of prestige that comes with being on the local RSN. That makes it easy to go to a bar and have them put on the game. On the other, in many MLS markets, that is not now and has not consistently ever been the case. In some, the carriage battles between the RSN, Regional Sports Network, and largest television providers take MLS teams off of a large swath of televisions in a market. I think channel surfing is a practice of the past, so that idea that MLS teams could hook that person just by cruising by the channel is a bit of a piece of wishful thinking. Still, many sports fans, probably your best bet at hooking someone, do subscribe to cable a bit more. So hopefully there might be some room to get the games simulcast on local TV. One thing I think would be intriguing would be to really normalize the MLS game windows during the next deal, like we have with the NFL and the Premier League. I think this past Saturday would be a good model. Perhaps have the biggest games stand alone in windows at 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern, with waves of 7 p.m. Eastern and 9:30 p.m. Eastern. I could definitely see some value in having a dedicated ESPN linear game on Sunday as well, but it has to be at a consistent time. So Rob, yeah, in answer to your question, so the way that MLS is structuring this deal for 2023 onwards, for the games, well, all the games are on Apple TV, but they will have consistent windows, with one exception, actually two exceptions. So the game plan is Wednesdays for three. There's going to be a whip around show available too, which is something we didn't mention in last week's podcast. So Wednesdays and Saturdays will be MLS games. There's going to be a 6-hour whip around show on Wednesday and a 6-hour whip around show on Saturdays. So what it could mean is that on East Coast, for example, on Wednesdays, you might have games starting at 6, 8 and 10. And the same thing on Saturdays, or maybe even kind of a longer period of time. So that's good news because you have that consistency. The only exceptions to that would be that, one, if a stadium's not available due to a conflict, whether it's an NFL game or something else happening at that stadium, that game can be moved to a different time or date. And then the other part of it is linear television. So if ESPN does, as we believe they will, sign a deal with MLS to get some games for linear, they will then be able to move those games to the actual start time. So on a Saturday broadcast or a Sunday broadcast, probably more likely Saturday, ESPN might show a game, or ESPN2 or ABC, and that game time will move to be on that channel. It'll still be available also on Apple TV through the streaming service. So good feedback there. Chris, when it comes to Apple TV getting MLS, I think it is the biggest acquisition so far for Apple TV. When it comes to sports, even bigger than getting Friday night's Major League Baseball games. The only thing that would be bigger is Apple TV getting the remains of NFL Sunday Ticket, should DirecTV decide to pull the plug on that. As a current Apple TV subscriber, I am happy that I will be able to watch Seattle games without blackout restrictions and the need for cable. Because of this deal, I also think that Apple TV will go after the rights to both Serie A and the UEFA club competitions once their deals with CBS end in a few years. Lastly, I fully agree with Chris that MLS does not need a linear TV component in order to sustain its growth going forward. So Kartik, what do you think? Do you think this could be, I mean, Apple's acquisition of rights for MLS, is this kind of tipping the toe in the water, opening the door to perhaps some other deals in the near future?
I think for sure. I think they're looking at live sports definitely as a consideration. One thing about the and other live sports, increased live sports, one thing about the start times, the kickoff times, we have to keep in mind MLS is focused more than anything on ticket sales and high attendance. And because of when MLS plays, because they've insisted, and again, I'm not going to go relitigate it. My views on calendar change are well known. I think it's the most critical element, even more than promotion relegation, that needs to happen for U.S. soccer, for our pro leagues. because of when they play, the season they play in, you can't start matches at 2 or 4 p.m. Eastern or 3 and 5 p.m. Eastern. You just can't. Anywhere in the United States, for the most part. So there may be some exceptions. I think Seattle, Portland, those places would be exceptions. But I think that you're looking largely at matches in prime time at night because of the geography of the country and the climate of the country.
So going back to Chris's question about whether this could be opening the door for Apple going after Serie A or the UEFA Champions League in the near future, those deals will be coming up soon. Kartik, I have to ask you a question, and I'll answer it too. But if you were not a analyst about television or soccer, I mean, not doing this podcast, and you were just a soccer fan, you're a hardcore soccer fan as you are, and then you were faced with the prospect for 2023 onwards, would you subscribe to the MLS streaming service to watch MLS games through Apple TV?
I suppose so, but it depends on the price point. I mean, if it's $40 a month, probably not. If it's $10 or $15 a month, what would that be over the course of a season? $90, $100, $120? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably then.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat. I'm probably actually leaning to, if I was just a regular soccer fan, which I'm not, so I will subscribe to Apple TV for this MLS streaming service. I mean, in order to watch the games, in order to analyze the coverage, et cetera, et cetera. But if I was just my regular soccer fan and I divorced all of this other stuff, I would have to question myself. I'd be like, do I really want to subscribe to a service where I don't have a MLS team? And am I going to be interested enough to go ahead and pay whatever price it is to subscribe to the service, whether it's $10 a month, whether it's $40 a month? Probably not. However, now, if Apple TV, because I have no interest in Major League Baseball on Friday nights, I have no interest in NFL Sunday Ticket, if they got that. I know a lot of listeners would argue the opposite. NFL Sunday Ticket probably would be something that would get them interested. But as a soccer fan, now, if they added Serie A and Champions League, that's a no-brainer. You mean MLS, Serie A, and Champions League? I'm in. So I think that's part of it too. I mean, this is a test also for Apple to try to gauge the interests of soccer fans and see, I mean, basically work out all the kinks, get this down to a science, and as they've done with a lot of, you know, the iPhone products and services and laptops and you name it, to master it, to figure out how do we go ahead and become the media giant in the United States. Which is where we're heading in many ways, is that even a few years from now, it might be when you want to watch content, you subscribe to either Apple, Amazon, Warner Brothers Discovery, whatever that becomes, and maybe Disney and Comcast. So that those are the media giants that are in this game, trying to acquire as much, not just soccer rights, but movies, original programs, shows, content, and maybe Google. You might add Google to that equation too, but there's not that much to choose from in the future. That's the way it's heading.
Yeah, but real quickly, I would argue when it comes to streaming, now this thing is ever evolving. 10 years is a long period of time. Business strategies change. Apple has changed its strategy in terms of streaming and over the top OTT platforms, et cetera, several times just in the last 5 years, let alone the next 10. But I still think Disney is ahead of all the other companies you listed in terms of market penetration in the U.S. with streaming and as kind of an OTT destination. So that's something that MLS still has to cope with. They're not going to be on Disney's OTT services.
Well, I think the other thing to that, Kartik, is Apple TV, the app itself, it's confusing. It is not intuitive. You mean, so for example, there was, I think last week I had a conversation with my wife, and she wanted to watch, I think it was Uncharted, the movie. And she said, I went onto Apple TV and it asked me how to pay for it. And that's a confusing thing. So the Apple TV app, once you go into it, you see a lot of content recommendations. You mean some of it is content on other services. I mean, it could be Amazon, it could be someplace else, where it's like it's recommending that you buy that film or rent that film through Apple TV, even though it's not a Apple TV product or owns thing. And it's hard to determine sometimes with the Apple TV app, which is the content that comes for free that's included, and also which is the Apple TV Plus content. It's a confusing mixture, and I think Apple TV is still figuring that out. Even with this MLS deal, when this MLS deal was announced, at first I thought this was going to be an Apple TV Plus deal, where if you subscribe to Apple TV Plus for $5 a month, you get access to MLS, you get access to all these great other content out there. And so there are some great shows on Apple TV Plus, including Ted Lasso. Well, Apple TV Plus is not Apple TV, which is the streaming, and actually MLS streaming service is not Apple TV either. It's going to be available through Apple TV, where you can subscribe through Apple TV. So Apple's trying to throw everything together, kind of everything in the kitchen sink together into the Apple TV app, where that's the app you go to. That's the app you go ahead and figure out what content you want to watch. Some of it's included for free. Some of it you have to subscribe to the Apple TV Plus app, a service. Some of it you might have to subscribe to MLS to watch all those games. And some of it you're watching, and if you want to watch it, you have to subscribe to it through Apple TV to watch it from a different service.
The opposite's actually happened with me that happened to your wife, which is there has been a recent time when I wanted to actually buy a movie through iTunes, through Apple TV, so I owned it in my Apple digital library on Apple TV, and they kept telling me to go to Tubi or Prime to watch it for free. And I was thinking, I'm trying to give you guys money, and you're trying to tell me to go to some other service to watch with commercials in the case of Tubi. So they're not even good at hawking their own product at times, right? When someone wants to pay for something. It's a very confusing app, and I think maybe between now and the time MLS kicks off in 2023, they declutter it or they do something to make it more straightforward. Although, I mean, they've had all this time and they haven't done that.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. It's still not a finished product by any means. And that goes back to what you were saying before, Kartik, about Apple. Don't be surprised if this changes a lot in the next 10 years in terms of how this works. Next up is Grego. Grego says, this Apple TV MLS deal is a major gamble for the league in terms of maintaining overall visibility in a landscape where they are already struggling for domestic awareness under the current TV deal. Whatever happens next in a linear TV capacity will likely decrease the awareness even less. I don't see a scenario where ESPN continues with MLS and even with a smaller bucket of matches to work with, they somehow make those games suddenly bigger in match production, hype, coverage, and so on. They still won't be a priority on SportsCenter. And unless there's an upcoming game on ESPN, will ESPN be promoting MLS in the weeks between the games they're airing? Likely not. Will Fox? Will CBS? When they're not airing international games and forcing in USMNT commentary with unrelated competition? So when and how will MLS maintain the awareness of the league on linear TV when the linear partners will likely be even less invested than before? But you spoke on something during the episode that really caught my attention. You mentioned that TUDN, Univision, was pushing MLS to change the calendar in order to receive greater consideration on the newest deal. I know probably 10 years or so ago, according to Eric Winalder, Fox was pushing MLS to change the calendar, and obviously MLS balked. What is MLS's hang-up with changing this calendar? I actually believe moving to a traditional schedule is doable. 6 to 8 week winter break, staggered match weeks in November, December, and February would be most probable, and would benefit MLS, CONCACAF, as well as the USMNT. I hope in the aftermath that MLS is having major internal discussions as to why this deal happened the way it did and what they need to do in order to grow their audience. Clearly, they are not doing enough to make MLS attractive on its own, that broadcasters want to invest big into the league that they hoped. It's actually kind of hard, even with linking with a brand like Apple, to view this as a potential failure. Sure, streaming is on trend with many soccer fans, but linear TV is still the primary mode of viewing for general sports fans, as well as fans of other soccer leagues and competitions. And that goes back to my earlier question as to what is the plan to continue to build awareness and grow and reach more fans. 10 years with limited TV availability is a long time. And so much can happen between now and then. And if MLS doesn't do the necessary work to make MLS more attractive to fans, to make them want to invest in getting yet another streaming service, this could be a fatal mistake to the league. Always enjoy the show when I can listen. I'm sure these are interesting times for covering soccer in the US. So, Grego, yeah, a lot of great insight there and opinions. Yeah, the TV, I mean, that's the whole thing about this Apple TV deal with MLS, is that the TV side has not been completed. So we've got ESPN, Fox, and presumably maybe one other broadcaster out there, basically letting them hang out to dry. I mean, so if they're interested in getting a deal with MLS, they need to come to MLS and make that deal happen. Likewise, I just don't see a massive influx of cash on that side, and not a lot of incentive for the TV networks to get really excited, other than showing maybe other than being like the only TV broadcaster showing games in English language on television. However, again, a lot of it depends on Apple. What do you think, Kartik? I mean, is the linear side, is are we in a time right now, and with this MLS deal, does it show that linear is a thing of the past? And streaming is the future, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's more complicated than that. I know we've seen several soccer leagues effectively cut their own linear presence, the Bundesliga and La Liga. Although, I mean, La Liga was on BN, so I don't really want to say that. Honestly, I know there are people who will say, oh, if you have Fubo or you have Sling, or what, you know, you have BN and it's accessible, but it really wasn't, okay? So maybe we don't put La Liga in that basket, but the Bundesliga cut from having... Look, there were some weekends the Bundesliga had as many matches on linear television via the Fox networks, FS1, FS2, and Fox over the air, than they're getting the entire season now with Disney. So there has been a move towards streaming, but I don't know. The thing that kind of surprised me was the latest Premier League deal, at least here in the States. The split is still kind of 50-50, right? You still have half the games on linear, which I thought with a six-year deal, in all the speculation we did in the run-up to that deal being done with NBC, with NBC Universal, was that, okay, they'll probably put more games on streaming. I thought they may limit their linear offerings to the NBC game, the NBC over-the-air games on Saturday, and maybe one or two matches on USA Network. That clearly hasn't happened. I mean, they're still going full throttle with basically a half and half, you know, half the games on linear, which is remarkable. So I don't think linear is out of the picture. Now, the question, Chris, then becomes, having said what I just said about the Premier League, still having, what, they have 380 matches a year. So basically 190 matches, give or take a few, on linear. Can all these other soccer leagues afford not to be on linear television? Can the Bundesliga continue to afford to have five matches a season or four matches a season on linear? La Liga, similar number. MLS, as I've reported, and others have confirmed, other reporters have put this out there too, that if ESPN keeps the rights, if Disney keeps the rights for linear, they're going to go down from about 40 match windows to 25. Fox, presumably, if they kept the rights, maybe the same thing. Can you afford to have so many be so streaming dependent when there is still a league? And Liga MX, too, let's mention, is mostly linear. So when Liga MX is mostly linear and Premier League is at least 50-50 linear, and those are the market leaders in this sport, can other leagues really afford to completely pull back? That, I think, is an open question.
Yeah, on this one, I think it's one of those things that if your viewership is large enough and there's enough of an interest, it makes sense to be on linear. So, like, for example, with La Liga moving from the, well, there's interest in La Liga, right? There's interest in Real Madrid, there's interest in Barcelona, but they were on the network, beIN Sports, that's not available in as many homes as possible. So I think there are advantages if you're a big league to being on ABC or Fox or NBC, especially those over-the-air games, because those will make a difference. However, Major League Soccer has been on television for a long, long time, and those viewing numbers, I mean, from that last weekend, we talked about USL Championship on ESPN getting 197,000 viewers for a game between, you know, two second division teams. You had, I think it was Nashville on FS1 last weekend, 88,000 people watched that game. So just because you're on linear TV doesn't mean that it's going to bring you into bigger audiences. There has to be enough of an interest to make it worthwhile on television, on linear. And with MLS, I think in many ways, I think that product is more, that league is more of a streaming product. And there's advantages to beIN on streaming. One of the advantages is that you're not going to have your viewing numbers on television plastered all over the place. Anytime MLS gets bad viewing numbers, like we just mentioned, 88,000 people watching a game on FS1, that's so small. That's tiny.
That's someone. So Chris, that's actually what someone who works in MLS told me the day the deal was announced, that this is a win for that reason, and basically said to me in a condescending way, you and Chris can't go on and on about the ratings every week the way you do. So there are people thinking that way in the league.
Yeah, so from a publicity point of view, for MLS not being on television right now, I mean for the 2023 deal, with not having a TV partner in place yet, that's not such a bad thing. But I do think they do need some of that big game awareness. I mean, you need to have MLS Cup final on ABC, I mean, you know, every other year or whatever it may be, just to have, to get that audience out to a bigger, you mean, for people that care, the people who tune in and watch those games. But for a long season, I don't think there's a lot of benefits. And we've seen that from the TV numbers. I mean, they're mediocre. They're not great. They're not horrible. They're just mediocre. Moving on, Amanda Flores says, in regards to last week's podcast, she says, great podcast as always. Some of the names I think Apple TV should consider using for MLS, and this is in terms of MLS deciding that they're going to go ahead and get rid of all of the local RSN deals and all of the, you know, so then all of those local broadcasters are gone. However, they have an opportunity to go ahead and hire anywhere from 10 to 14 commentating teams. And so here's Amanda's picks for commentators and color commentators. Commentators: Callum Williams, JP Della Camera, Jake Zavin, Tyler Torrens, and Steve Cangelosi. And then on the color side, the co-commentary: Casey Keller, Danny Higginbotham, Brian Dunseth, Charlie Davis, or Davies, and then Kaylin Kyle. So those are good names, right, Kartik?
Yeah, great names, Amanda. I'm going to add two more. One on the commentator side, which is Jonathan Yardley. And on the co-commentary side, I'm going to add Lloyd Sam. Oh, and actually, two on the commentator side. Eric Krakauer, although I like when he gets to call other things too, right, other than MLS. But Eric Krakauer for sure on the commentator side as well.
All right, next up, Bill Reese says, at a certain point, I imagine you and Kartik will have the people running MLS on Apple TV on the podcast. When you do, it would be great if you ask fans of the podcast to submit the things they'd like to see on the service, as there will be no better people to make the request to. As my dad always told me, you never take a low no. I'd love the opportunity to beg them to add, pause, rewind, and start from the beginning of the broadcast. As someone whose kids go to bed around the time most evening games kick off, I relish the opportunity to start a match from the beginning after my son eventually falls asleep. It's the number one thing that ESPN Plus does better than Paramount Plus or Peacock. Thank you, and keep up the great work. Yeah, I think those things are going to be a slam dunk from Apple TV in terms of functionality, in terms of those types of things where it is very much customer centric. Those things that they will, I mean, us too, right? All the different features and benefits, all the kind of the bells and whistles. I think a lot of those will be included. But if we do get an opportunity, if and when we do, we'll certainly dive deeper into that. Next up is Uncle Dishwasher, long-time listener of the show, first-time writer, and I love your handle. Just wanted to share a couple of thoughts on the MLS deal with Apple. The deal certainly contains risks and lots of unknowns, and we won't know if it was good or bad for the league until probably at least several years into it. It has been clearly shown over time that mainstream broadcast television of the league is not what is helping to grow it in America. MLS ratings on ESPN and Fox have become a punchline for soccer media, including on this show, if we are being honest. It seems as though the league, and actually, I'm sorry, Uncle Dishwasher, I think I lost the rest of your... Actually, let me see if I can find it. Apologies, listeners. I think I missed the rest of your email, so apologies, Uncle Dishwasher. But Kartik, that's a good point, though, too, because what Uncle Dishwasher says about MLS TV ratings on TV. I think the other side of the fence, though, Kartik, is that being on streaming, I mean, gives you that comfort in not sharing numbers, in not having those numbers plastered all over the internet for everyone to see and analyze and talk about. However, there's always the chance, too, that people could get lost, that those games could get lost. It's one of those things with Major League Soccer. If you're not in that Apple TV ecosystem, what is there to, so if you have an Apple iPhone, right? And that's not everyone. There are more Android users than there are Apple iPhone users. But if you have an Apple iPhone, you're more likely probably to get alerts or Apple News or different things that Apple is able to then go ahead and message you or kind of influence you to go ahead and make sure that you know about everything that's happening with an MLS. Now, if you're an Apple iPhone user, that's great, right? That's fantastic. If you're a fan of that league or that club or have any interest in that. But there is the risk that you will get forgotten about, that you will not get taught about because not everyone's watching the games or talking about the games. I think at the end of the day, Kartik, an ideal situation would have been ESPN+. ESPN+ having all of the Apple inventory and then broadcasting that worldwide. Apple Plus is not in every single country in the world. But the price point, right, $6.99, and with all the other content it has, the Bundesliga, La Liga, etc., that's the slam dunk. That's the place to go. Except here we go to Apple TV, and it has no other soccer. This is the first soccer that Apple TV is getting. And, not everyone subscribes to it, and what the price point is. So what is the price point? You talked about before, it could be $10 a month, could be $40 a month. Like, what for you is the sweet spot here?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's $15 or $20 a month is the max. I should mention, and maybe should have mentioned this last week, there's growing politically antitrust concerns about Apple using their phones and their iPads to hook people to sign up for Apple TV Plus. So that might end up being an issue in the United States. In the EU, there's an issue of the chargers Apple uses, right? The lightning cables not being uniform with USB-C devices, which Android phones tend to run on. So the EU is going after Apple on that. So there are some possibilities within this 10-year window that Apple will not be able to leverage their advantages in other places to push Apple TV Plus and therefore MLS. Again, we don't know what that's going to look like, but it may not be this built-in advantage that people think. And by the way, you're right with your statistic. There's this assumption among Apple people, just like 20 years ago, there were a lot of Apple people who would come after me like, "Oh, you don't use a Mac? How could you not use a Mac? How are you using a Windows PC? Everyone uses a Mac." Well, no, most people used Windows PCs at that time, but probably may not be the case anymore, but was then. There is an assumption among a lot of Apple people that everybody has an iPhone or everybody has an iPad. You're correctly state that's not the case. In fact, you're a person, I think, Chris, if I'm not mistaken, that switched from an iPhone to an Android device at some point. And there are a lot of other people I know that have done that. just because of the kind of open-endedness, the Google ecosystem is a little more open.
That may be true. That may be true, Kartik. I have saved Uncle Dishwasher's rest of his email. I will continue to and read the rest of it. He continues. He says, "It seems as though the league is gaining its fans primarily through people experiencing matches in person and getting hooked, or latching onto the supporter culture that has been growing and evolving for a lot of teams throughout the league, and not through casual channel surfing and landing on a match. There are a lot of American soccer fans that despise MLS, and whether or not it is available on major American TV channels will never impact them accepting the league. They will continue to scoff at it and only watch European leagues, whether it is easily available or not. MLS fans are very niche, and as a longtime fan of MLS, my favorite team is the LA Galaxy. I feel there is a common feeling among fans of the league that mainstream American sports broadcasters and even a lot of American soccer media outside of the league don't take it seriously and still even make fun of it. It has been shown that MLS fans tend not to watch national games, but they follow their own team very closely. This deal leans into that, centralizing all matches in one place and taking emphasis off of national broadcasts on a platform and hoping different markets will all tune in, which they don't. It's a leap that is both risky and also has a potential upside to make this deal and lean more into providing expanded coverage to a fan base that they know will subscribe and already have, while trying to continue to grow the league outside of broadcasting on mainstream television. Thanks for all your continued coverage of soccer in this country." I think those are great points, Kartik. From personal experience, I have met many MLS fans, and in many instances, they know that team. They know that team inside out. You mean they go to all the home games? They have. You mean they got the shirt, they got the scarf, they got the flag, they got the chants. They live for match days. I get into conversation about soccer outside of that team, and I can tell within 2 minutes that this person has no idea about the rest of the league and no idea about the rest of soccer anywhere else in the world. They are a fan of that team. And I think that's to Uncle Dishwasher's point, is that the fans in those cities, if you live in an MLS city, you are likely to have gone to an MLS game. Now, whether you continue to go to those games or not, I mean, you might be a big fan, you might be a casual fan, you might be an indifferent fan. But outside of those cities, how do you get those fans to get excited when there's so many other options available that are better?
Yeah, that's the big question. I think in a lot of cases, though, you've got fans, though, now that will, with their season tickets or with their local interests, sign up for the Apple TV package. This is another advantage for MLS, right?
Yeah, but they're already in that. I mean, they've already been sold, right? So they get it for free, or free in quotation marks. So that's a known entity. But outside of that, you mean for the fans, for MLS, or actually soccer fans or sports fans that are not into a specific local MLS club, how do you win those over?
I mean, at this point, probably you don't. That's the reality. I mean, the only variable here is the 2026 World Cup. Does that hook a whole new generation of fans who then look for their local clubs, and whether it's a USL club or an MLS club, or if NISA's still in business? I have my doubts about whether NISA's still in business in 2026, but if it's a NISA club, does that change the game in that there's all of these new fans brought into the sport who then follow those clubs? Or does it become like previous World Cups that were not held in the United States? I mean, I remember very distinctly the 2006 World Cup, Bill Simmons, who everybody I think knows, he's a big, was a, you know, the big columnist at ESPN at the time, obviously said some controversial things that I happen to agree with, but he ended up making his way out of ESPN. Bill Simmons' reaction to getting hooked on soccer in the 2006 World Cup was, you know, I'm going to start watching the Premier League, and here's a long column about what's great about the Premier League and what team should I support in the Premier League. So that could happen too, and that won't help MLS or the domestic leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave is next. He says, I hope you talk about global implications. A big wild card is whether there is a boatload of fans outside of US and Canada who are eager to follow MLS. Apple will have great marketing and a great, great app. But does the product resonate enough to get a lot of people outside MLS's home territory to pay? And Dave, I think this one comes down to transfers. I think that's the only major game that people outside of North America would pay attention to. So if you do sign a Messi, if you do sign a Ronaldo, and I mean, we know how many fans that they have, I mean, of those stars globally, then that's a slam dunk. But without those transfers, I just don't see a lot of interest. Next up is Carlos. Carlos says, just listened to the show from a few weeks ago. I have a few issues. MLS was knocked for their anti-competitive business practices, but why are you okay with PSG, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern, and Manchester City's of the world winning all the major titles all the time? There is no pro rel in MLS, and locking out cities like Chattanooga from MLS is a no-no. But these high-profile teams aren't open to competition either. Yes, there are two. These are two different things, but why are you okay with one and not the other? If you want to compare apples to apples, a lot of US clubs fail because they're renting baseball or football stadiums built by other teams. Barry Football Club died after 137 years ago and had their own stadium. These US teams that are failing aren't even 10 years old and do not have their own pitch, and usually they don't have their own training facilities. If they don't sell enough tickets, of course, they're going to shut down. Teams in Europe have had time in their cities that US teams simply do not have. How successful would a hypothetical new club in London do? They would have to share a pitch and try to make new fans, battling older, more established teams. Same goes for new soccer clubs here. They're battling football, baseball, basketball, and hockey teams for fans, all of which European teams do not have competing with them. Kartik, you want to chime in on this one?
Okay, so when we talk about anti-competitive practices, we're talking about anti-competitive practices from a business standpoint. There are a lot of fans in Europe that are just happy their clubs have an opportunity to compete at the highest possible level, which means if they're right-sized business-wise to being a third or fourth division club, a small town, whatever, small club in the neighborhood, that's fine. But they have the opportunity to move up. I do agree on the lack of competitiveness at the top of European leagues. I mean, and I think it's obviously gotten worse recently. But a lot of fans in Germany don't care. You know, when I bring it up, they're like, well, we own our football clubs. We have a 50-plus-1 rule in this country, which you don't have in the U.S. In fact, it's the opposite. To have a professional club in the United States, this is part of the reason Detroit had such – we talked about Detroit earlier in this podcast. Part of the reason why they had so much trouble becoming a professional club the first few years is you have to have a multi-millionaire in terms of net worth own 35% of your club. That's codified in the rules in U.S. soccer to be a professional club. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I think the other issue you mentioned is that the rented facilities. I completely agree with that. In fact, as someone who's worked in lower division soccer, I keep mentioning this as an issue. And in fact, I keep mentioning this as an issue when it comes to the U.S. Open Cup. So there are people who say, oh, well, you should give the lower division teams all the hosting rights. In theory, that sounds good. But then that involves renting the facility midweek, opening that facility, paying for security, and then selling tickets on short notice for a midweek game, which is much harder to sell than a weekend game. So I totally buy that, and I know a lot of clubs have gone out of business because of facility issues. In fact, the previous USL club in Austin went out of business. Austin's now this hot MLS market. There have been a couple USL clubs in Austin, but the one that existed, the second version of the Aztecs went out of business because of venue issues, and that's happened over and over again. So I totally agree with that. The Bury example is an interesting one because they had a guy that was clearly trying to leverage the club for other businesses and take money out of the club. More and more of those people have bought football clubs in Europe, which is why I'm not in love with the way things are done in England. I think England has been a magnet. I think England is just kind of the U.S. with the Pro Rel, but with a lot of the same, it attracts a lot of the same types of business people to own football clubs. Germany is a better model. Last point you made is about competition with other sports for fans. This is I will say, to me, a very naive point. I hear this all the time from MLS fans that, well, in Europe, there are no other sports. Really? You think in France, where football is not the number one sport, maybe it is the number one sport now because of immigrants, but it was traditionally never the number one team sport. Rugby was. That the clubs, there's a reason why there wasn't a first division club in Paris for so many years. Because PSG is a more recent entity. They're not that much older than most American clubs, right? Because they had other competition in Paris. It's not a football town. London, I would argue, is not really a football town either, okay? There are other sporting interests in London. There are people who I know in London are always telling me about going to Twickenham and going to Lord's, and they're not going to football matches. They're going to cricket matches or rugby matches. So in Italy, there are other sporting interests. In Spain, there are other sporting interests. Chris, you're from Wales. Where does football rank among the top sports in Wales?
I think right now, it made it into the first place. But see, going back about 10 years ago, back to the beginning of time, it was rugby. And soccer was always, when I was growing up, soccer was a small sport, relatively speaking. It was... Rugby was always the biggest thing in the country, and now I think finally, just with the success of the Welsh national team in the Euros and now with the World Cup, I think perhaps slightly rugby is number two. But yeah, no.
Manchester and Liverpool are football mad towns. I'm not denying that. But don't project Manchester and Liverpool and Valencia. There are a couple of really football mad towns in Europe. And then every town in Germany, I agree, Germany, it's the number one sport. Across the entire continent. It's just not the case. It's not the case in London. It's not the case in Paris. I don't really think it's the case in Rome. Although, you know, maybe people could argue about that. But I think in a lot of places, football has to compete, just like it does here.
NPOPB1 says, with the majority of MLS TV on Apple TV, why not switch the calendar? Apple doesn't have college football or basketball, plus transfer market aligns, which honestly would make better selling profit for Major League Soccer. Yeah, I don't think we're there yet, Kartik, in terms of MLS changing the calendar. I think it's almost like everyone's in agreement that change needs to happen, and MLS is still sticking to its guns and really not. I mean, the calendar has expanded a little bit just based on the number of teams in the league, but yeah, you would think they would change things, but they're not going to, I don't think, at any point.
But real quickly, and I know I've talked ad nauseum about calendar change, and I believe it's the biggest issue in the domestic leagues in this country, even bigger than promotion and relegation, that the calendar has to change. USL is very actively looking at it, and my sense is they're going to pull the trigger and do it. So if USL's calendar is misaligned from MLS's, I think then the game might change a little bit.
Okay, we're going to move on to TV coverage. Jeff says, have you noticed a lot of pundits and commentators talking about coaches or teams that know how to win cup competitions? For example, people pointed to Real Madrid and their long history of success in the Champions League to suggest that they somehow know how to navigate those competitions better than other teams, apart from maybe playing more conservatively or having a good amount of confidence. How does past success in cup competitions make a difference or manifest in the way they play? Is this just something people like to say, or is there something behind it? Thank you for answering. I think that there's a little bit of something to it in terms of clubs knowing how to kill off games. Knowing how to, I mean, if you're 1-0 up and you're in the 75th minute, knowing how to waste some time, knowing how to, I mean, not go for that second goal. Other than that, I would say that in terms of preparation for games and travel times and back and forth and hotels and knowing kind of the correct or the best way to enhance a team or get the best out of a team from previous experience going to competitions and going deep into competitions. Other than that, Kartik, do you think it's lazy commentary or is there something to it?
No, it's mostly lazy commentary. The one place I would, I do think it is a factor is what you just mentioned is on the front office end, on the organizational end. This has nothing to do with players and managers, with travel, with prep, with meals, with hotels, that sort of stuff. And that comes down a lot to front office staff and operational staff that have been through long cup runs in the past or have some knowledge of how to do that. So that's where it comes in, although they never talk about that on CBS, right? They're talking about it. It's just like, oh, Real Madrid knows how to win Champions Leagues and Liverpool loses a lot of finals and this sort of thing. And Man City doesn't know how to – they don't have the guile to kill off games. I mean, it's, I think, very lazy punditry for the most part.
All right, four more pieces of listener mailbag to go. James says, so I listened to the show with Felipe Cardenas about the energy that Spanish announcers bring, and watching games in the US seem like a funeral. You asked him if it would be possible to bring that energy to the English language. I think a great example of what they would sound like is to listen to ESPN's NHL announcers from the 1990s, who were mostly Canadian. I remember watching hockey growing up in the 90s, not knowing much about the sport, but these guys made it sound exciting, something that is desperately needed when you tune into a soccer game or, in English in this country, as he's right that they do sound like a funeral. And I think it's one of those things, again, it's each commentator has a different style, just as everyone does, right, in terms of how they speak or you mean how loudly or how excitable or how boring, whatever it may be. And to go ahead and throw kind of all the English language commentators into one bucket and say, okay, they're all boring is also, I think, lazy analysis in terms of some of the commentary out there. There are some very excitable commentators that are really exciting to watch. Vice versa, on the Spanish side, there's some that, I mean, I'm sure the same thing too. So, but still, good points there. And listeners, eight NHL announcers from the 90s. Cool. All right, ProRel. Joshua says, I'm a regular listener to the podcast. I haven't gone back to listen to previous episodes on the topic of promotion relegation. My question to you is, how are states like my home state of Arkansas supposed to compete with this U.S. soccer system? I know one of many issues is pay-to-play. However, is there a bigger problem with the professional league standards that U.S. soccer implements? I feel like these standards hinder states like Arkansas, where they only have two market areas to be able to have a soccer club, not to mention that college football and athletics reign supreme as far as fan support. I would love to get your feedback. Keep up the great work as always, and enjoy your football. Kartik, I know this is a pet peeve of yours in terms of this topic.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, I think you have to change the calendar before you do pro rel. I also think the pro league standards have to go. Absolutely, positively have to go. They are sold. And so we get back to the person who wrote in earlier and said that about competition. The thing that makes American professional soccer less competitive and anti-competitive, and to me, potentially violating U.S. antitrust laws, are the pro league standards, are the PLS. So, Joshua, they have to go. Arkansas is a state that's effectively disenfranchised. Little Rock has, by the way, a great NPSL club that has done very well through the years. But again, that's in the adult amateur level. States like Arkansas, states like Mississippi, Montana, et cetera, they're disenfranchised by the PLS system. And a lot of cities are. Look, I mean, I can tell you absolutely for a fact, when I worked at NASL, we had to limit. There were some markets we were interested in that we didn't want to, we didn't pursue expansion opportunities there because they fell below the 750,000 K metro area standard. And USL, I know absolutely the same thing happened in that period where they already had a number of markets in Wilmington and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and a few others, which at the time Rio Grande Valley, although now that's over 750, McAllen, Texas area, that were below that number. So they had very little leeway. They couldn't go to any more markets and get exemptions. So it's a disenfranchisement tool, as is the ownership standard, as I pointed out earlier. And then there's another thing. I'm just going to point this out really quickly, Chris, even though it's a little extraneous. There is a standard. There is a requirement you have your league set up in three different time zones to meet the pro league standards of U.S. soccer, which is the absolute most absurd thing ever written into standards for a professional league in any sport that I know of in the world. It's crazy. And that's a way of disenfranchising regional leagues or having regional leagues set up where travel is more affordable. It effectively locks in a monopoly for MLS.
Yeah, that's the thing. And this leads right into the next question. But that's the thing about the 2026 World Cup and the 16 cities that were chosen in North America. If you look at the map, there's a huge, huge blank space in the central area and Midwest area. For the most part, I mean, there were some cities selected in those areas, but very few. But a huge blank space where there's nothing going on. And going back to Joshua's question about the professional league standards, I mean, that does limit the growth of soccer in states that have smaller populations, you mean, that don't have major, major, major cities. Ultimately, that hurts the growth of soccer in this country. So, yeah, no, Kartika, you're right on board there. Jairzinho says, in regards to the 2026 World Cup, for the selection of the cities, I think FIFA got it right on this one. The global audience are going to want to visit the cities that are deemed to be global or at least global-oriented. The only reason why Boston got in is because of the Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, and its relatively close proximity to New York and Philadelphia, plus the availability of flights to Miami. I suspect Kansas City got it instead of Denver because of the Hunt family and their historical ties to U.S. soccer. Plus, Kansas City would be much easier to get to from the cities within its designated central region.
Yeah, again, Chris, the Boston thing, I don't know why it's so controversial. Look, I don't like them playing at Foxborough. I wish they'd pick Baltimore instead. I'll come out and say that. But Boston, I think a lot of younger people, and I went ahead and tweeted this. You may have seen the tweet, tweeted a thread about it. A lot of younger people, I don't think, realize how important Boston is, not only historically in the U.S., but business-wise. It's still one of the four or five leading business centers. And once you take Chicago out of the equation, because Chicago doesn't have a place big enough, a facility big enough to host, I think cutting Boston would have been risky, because it's also about sponsorship. It's also about venture capital, all these things which Boston is very concentrated in.
Last but not least, RJ says, is there a world feed on radio for the World Cup? If so, why doesn't Fox pick it up? Do you know if they have any radio plans for this fall? So, good question about the world feed for radio. I don't believe there is one. I think it's one of those things where each broadcaster in the different areas around the world goes ahead and picks up the rights to it and broadcasts it on their own. Part of the issue is even language in terms of having a world feed. I mean, English is not going to work globally, but in regards to your second question is why doesn't Fox pick it up? What they do, and I'm sure what they'll do for the 2022 World Cup, is they'll just go ahead and simulcast the television commentary and then use that for radio as they did for the 2018 World Cup. The feedback we got from a lot of listeners who listened to that those commentaries on, I think, SiriusXM FC, was that there was just kind of long patches of silence. It's a television commentary on radio. It doesn't work. It's radio's a different medium. So in terms of, do you know if there are any radio plans for this fall? Nothing's been announced yet, but again, too, I'm imagining that Fox will do the same as 2018. However, if you can, there are ways you can listen to either TalkSport or BBC Radio 5 Live, and I'm sure that they'll have actual radio commentary of games from the World Cup. So if you are traveling or you want to listen to the radio, there are definitely ways to listen to it in English language. All right, listeners, thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for all of your questions, feedback, insight, analysis. This is an ongoing topic with the MLS media rights deal. We had a story this week. It's still live on the homepage that goes into detail in regards to the local broadcasters and how much MLS, in many ways, is going to face a tough battle, because there are a lot of listeners that have a close relationship with the local broadcasters. So no matter what city you're in the US, you're used to watching those local broadcasters bring your team to television. And that's going away. So we have an in-depth piece there from Daniel Feuerstein on the website, and we will have more articles in the coming days and weeks in regards to this deal that analyzes it in more detail and maybe shares some of the insight that we have from some of our sources in regards to this deal, which is a major one. And of course, the TV part of it is going to be coming soon too. Kartik, looking ahead, today we're recording this on Thursday. Today they announced the championship EFL schedule, so that the new season begins, I think it's July 29th. We've got...
Yeah, shameless plug, I'll be on TalkSport later tonight, U.S. time, if you're listening on Thursday, to break down that fixture release. So
yep.
Look for that.
Yeah, and then July 7th is the opening day of the UEFA Women's Euro 2022 tournament. And of course, too, there's also, of course, MLS games, NWSL games. There's the CONCACAF W Championship that starts up on July 4th. And what else? There's the Argentine League, Brazilian League going on. There's still a lot of soccer going
Women's
on.
Women's Euros? Did you mention that?
Yep. July 7th. Yep. So, yep. All right, listeners. So if you do have any feedback for us or any questions you'd like us to answer on an upcoming podcast, go ahead and email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, Twitter is @worldsoccertalk. And also, you can also post your comments in the podcast thread on worldsoccertalk.com and just click on pods in the navigation bar. Kartik, where can everyone find you on Twitter for your insights and analysis about a whole host of different topics?
Yeah, KKFLA737.
All right, listeners, thank you for listening in. We hope you'll be back next week. Kartik, what are they going to do and what should you do?
Enjoy your football.